This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh boy, oh boy. We missed the hurricane. Thank you. Thank you. We didn't have it, and it was wonderful that it just passed us. And so I was worried that we would have to cancel today's program and I'd be stuck in the house. But here I am in the studio here at Tantalk, and I am so happy to be here because I was so looking forward to this interview too, because I just love her. Leslie Carroll is, well, she was one of my very first guests when I first started this program. Over 6 years ago, I can't believe it. And of course, she's been on for a number of times, but we last talked to her when she was here for American Princess, the love story of Meghan Markle and Prince Harry. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Patsy. Happy Thursday.
Well, thank you. Well, I think we did have another call after that book.
Yeah, I'm sure we did.
Yeah, we did, because whenever I'm thinking of royalty and kings and queens and the royal houses, I think of you because you are the expert. I was just talking to Irene Goodman in New York City. Well, she's not in New York City. Nobody's in New York City. New York City literary agent, of course. And she said to say hello to you. And of course, she said, if you're talking about royalty, she said, Leslie is the authority.
Well, that's very kind of her. Irene has been an incredible champion of my work since 1999. She was the first agent I ever had and the only agent I've ever had.
Well, she loves you, and she said, she can go right through the ages. So I wanted to have you on because, of course, last week we had a royal experience, and I thought, let's get a little insight into that, and then also a chance that you can talk about some of your books. But what did you think about this event last week?
Okay, how to say this nicely, because I don't know who's listening. Well, first of all, royal watchers will know that both wives stayed away, and I was actually interviewed by Fox Online, which is different from the Fox National TV, but Fox Online always calls me for a quote, and they wanted to know what I thought about Meghan staying away. And I said, well, the way the British press treats her, she's either damned if she does or damned if she doesn't. She's postpartum and breastfeeding an infant, and she's got a toddler in tow, so of course she's not going to travel. And then it turns out that Kate wasn't going to go either, because and there are a lot of stories about why, how, that first they said it should just be for the brothers, no wives, and because Meghan's not going, Kate will stay away as well. But then I read recently that Kate had been exposed to somebody with COVID, and that even though she had both of her vaccines, she was self-isolating just for, you know, precaution, but William wasn't. So, I mean, Kensington Palace is a very big place. Now I've heard rumors that Kate and William really live together, all of that, you know.
Oh, you have so much fun. You have made a career of royal rumors.
I know. I like to say that I write about the loves and lives of European royalty, and that royal families are just as dysfunctional as everybody else's family. It's just that they have better clothes and jewelry.
Well, we've certainly seen that they are just as dysfunctional. Woo! Well, anyway, I wouldn't have recommended, even if she wasn't breastfeeding, even if she wasn't postpartum, I wouldn't recommend getting on a plane and flying to England. I cannot imagine sitting there for hours and hours with that mask on. It would drive me crazy.
Well, I went back to New York. I hadn't seen my parents, who are aging and getting more infirm by the day. Hadn't seen them since before the pandemic began, and my husband and I flew back to New York City. And that, from Denver, it's it's like 3.5 hours in one direction and 4.5 hours in the other direction, and wearing the mask was not a delightful experience, but it was a really crowded plane.
Wow, I know. They're very crowded. I have a friend who yesterday left for England, and I'm hoping that he's going to be at Wembley on Sunday for the big game.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, it's not comfortable. I mean, flying isn't comfortable like it was in the old days anyway, let alone, you know.
I'd like to know from you, Patsy, have you seen the statue in Kensington Palace? The Diana statue.
Yes.
Okay. Let's dish.
Okay. Who's gonna do it? You, because I'm gonna defer to you because you are.
All right.
You've looked at so many statues of I'm sure you visited them all. Just the royal palaces, you've visited museums, and you've stared and looked because you've examined the royalty. What do you think?
In my books about royals, the nonfiction books, there are five of them. Actually, there are six. This one was commissioned by Barnes & Noble. It's kind of a coffee table book. But in the books where I have written about Charles and Diana, in notorious royal marriages and royal affairs, everything we know about Diana is a woman of tremendous humanity and compassion and vulnerability. And I looked at that statue, and we know her so well for relating to children. Remember when she picked up the little boy in the hospital in New York City who had AIDS, and she gave him a cuddle because she wanted to demonstrate that this was not something, you know, you were going to catch by cuddling a little child. So I looked at the statue, and I have to say, maybe my Facebook friends all love me, and maybe they just agree with me, but all of us who are royal readers or royal followers or royal fans, we all came to the same conclusion, which is it looks like some Cold War statue. She looks like a crossing guard.
Yes.
And she's not relating to the children at all.
Not at all.
And she looks, obviously she's a statue, so it's stiff. It's not a human. But it doesn't really resemble Diana. One of my friends said her dress, her blouse is cut too low, and she just looks like just any old housewife from the 1980s.
Well, she belonged to the Soviet Union. That's what I felt.
Exactly. It looks like a Soviet statue, just a crossing guard.
Yes. Well,
she's not relating to the children. The children aren't relating to her. She would have, every time we saw Diana with the people, she would kneel down because she was a tall woman. She was 5'9". She would kneel down to their level so she could be eye to eye with them. And she's this sculpture. She's just standing there.
Oh, I think it's horrible. I'm going to say the word. They might not let me back in England. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to get in. But I mean, because I look at it from, I do some sculpting. I've done some sculpting in the past. And in my mind, I would love to sculpt this statue of her the way I see her. And it's not true that statues are not lifeless. Some statues, when you stand in front of them, they are so full of life. They might be white marble, they might be brass, they might be anything, but they're alive. You can feel it. You get so excited by it. I mean, just walk through the Louvre sometimes. Statues, they take your breath away.
Yes. The Winged Victory. She looks like she's going to take off. And Michelangelo's Pietà. You don't have to be a Catholic or a Christian to cry at that with Mary holding dead Jesus. I mean, my God, it's so moving.
I mean,
it feels lifelike. It feels like the Mary is going to cry at any minute.
All the guy had to do was go to the Rodin Museum in Paris and walk through that garden, and those statues. I spent hours in that garden, and the house, of course, his house. And those statues, I defy anybody to say that they look dead. I mean, you almost feel like if you reach out your hand, they'll just like come down to you, you know? So the choice of the metal, the choice of the color, the choice of the dress. She wore so many beautiful dresses.
Exactly.
I would have done her with a dress with a cape. And to tell you the truth, I hate statues where birds are going to do their business on them. And I would have.
You're right. You're absolutely right. You know, if something, if she knelt down and made it harder for the birds to land, it would have been.
Yeah, well, no, I would have. Anyway. I imagined it. And this is how I would have done it. I would have had her with one hand having a cape, one of her capes, and just sort of throwing it a little bit over her head. So that if the birds are going to do their business, it's going to go on the cape. And it wouldn't touch her beautiful head and beautiful face. And the other, exactly, with some touch of humanity, of reaching out to people, reaching out. And this one is like, now, I don't know if you've visited the Soviet. You probably went to the Soviet Union.
No, I never.
You never?
I have seen the artwork.
Oh, yeah. Even in the smallest towns, because most people only go to Moscow and, you know, but even in the smallest towns, they have, they love those statues. They really did. I mean, you got Stalin all over the place, but they also had to the workers and to the lady bus drivers. They particularly loved drivers.
She can be the lady crossing guard.
Yeah. And so it's funny that you said crossing guard because they have almost in every you know, mid-sized town, they will have this woman, hardy woman. We let her before the Americans let anyone, women have any equality. We let them have equality because we let them be bus drivers.
So,
so I mean, when you have so much beauty to work with, she was so beautiful.
She was beautiful, and she was vulnerable, and she was compassionate, and none of that is in the statue.
None of it. It breaks my... Oh, it's sort of like what they do to South London, these horrible buildings they build there. They're surrounded by beautiful buildings in England, magnificent buildings. And then in South London, they build these monstrosities that are disgusting. I mean, like, you know, bunker buildings they built.
Brutalist architecture. Well, we know that Prince Charles has raged against modern architecture for decades. That's been one of his pet peeves.
Well, this horrible stuff. I never understand how people, when they're surrounded by something really beautiful, can just make ugly things. We have here in our town here, St. Petersburg, we have this beautiful VA hospital. It's old, it's gorgeous. So many of our soldiers and sailors went through this hospital during World War II. The hospital is beautiful. And then they built the extension, and it is the ugliest thing you ever saw. And I mean, I could never understand how could the architect stand in front of this beautiful building and then design this ugly building to go with it. It just, you know. So I'm sorry, but I think the statue is terrible, and I would like to redo it.
I think so too. They need a new competition. Well, what's interesting is that the sculptor who did the statue, he appears to be very good with like soldiers and sailors and that kind of thing, because he's doing some composition, and his men in uniform looked very accurate and like they were about to speak to you. But he's the same sculptor who did the face of Queen Elizabeth on the current coins, and she looks like this craggy old bag lady, and it's like, that's not Queen Elizabeth. I've seen her up close, and she's got the most beautiful complexion. Of course she's in her mid-90s, but she looks fantastic.
Yeah, I know. I don't know who... we'll drop that subject, but I'll tell you something. I wish they'd commission me, and I would sculpt something really gorgeous. As a matter of fact, when I have some spare time, I might work on a little model of what I would do.
I can't wait to see that. I want to see that.
That would be fun. I think I need, you know, in my spare time, I'm not doing everything else, because it should be something that would really honor her beauty. And I don't believe she would... like this monstrosity.
No, I don't think she would like it either.
Well, you know, it seems like yesterday that you were over there, you know, at Windsor Castle for American Princess. We won't go into all of that controversy. I just wish them the best.
I do too. I think that Harry has finally broken a toxic cycle.
Yeah.
And I know that there are a lot of people, especially on the other side of the pond, that don't feel the same way we do. That, you know, how could he diss his own family, the royal family? How could he air the dirty linen in public that belongs in a shrink's office, blah, blah, blah?
Yeah, we'll wish them the best. They've got two kids now. I want them to be happy, although... that is not the location I would select to live, but you know they chose it, and I hope they're happy there. And
well,
hope
they, at least they get to see water too. They're not landlocked like I am in Denver right now. But you know the two of them. Who is it who famously said sunlight is the best disinfectant?
Yeah,
and I think that you know the royal family. And remember, I'm basically a royalist. I've written all these books. If I wasn't a fan. Or interested in royal families, I wouldn't have written all these books. I would have found something else to do.
That's right. So, and, of course, you know, nobody does it better than you, as Irene said. So let's talk about, we have a little bit of time to promote your books. Tell people.
Okay.
Get out there and start buying.
All right. Yes, get out there and start buying. You can read a whole series, the nonfiction books, which are written, Chicago Tribune described it as, an irresistible combination of People Magazine meets the History Channel. So you get a fast, fun read that is extensively historically researched. It's all facts. And sometimes the real story is a whole lot juicier than what we novelists can write. And I'll talk about my novels in a minute. But if people go to my website, that's the easiest way to get samples of the books and see where they can buy them. It's www.leslie carroll.com. Now, I've written three different genres. I started out with Irene. First book she sold was in contemporary women's fiction. So those books are all still available. You can go on my website and click on those links. And then I started writing historical fiction, and because that was for another publisher, I had to use a pen name. So I started out as Amanda Elliott, E-L-Y-O-T, and I was choosing the names of the characters from Noel Coward's Private Lives, because that was one of my favorite plays to perform as an actress. Then I switched publishing houses again for my historical fiction and wrote three novels, a trilogy on the life of Marie Antoinette. And I have some kind of exciting news about that. The name under which I wrote those books is Juliet, like Romeo and Juliet, Gray, G-R-E-Y. The Juliet Gray Marie Antoinette novels are Becoming Marie Antoinette, Days of Splendor, Days of Sorrow, and Confessions of Marie Antoinette. And through those novels, I was tapped recently by a really interesting new company called Bardiem, like Bard, B-A-R-D, like Shakespeare, and E-M as in museum. Bardiem does apps. They contract out historical novelists like me to write a real-life story set inside a historical location. And you follow in the footsteps of the famous people that actually walked those rooms and those halls where you are visiting. So your dear friend Margaret George was hired to do the Roman Colosseum. And I was hired to do two stories, to step inside the story of Versailles, the king's rooms and the queen's rooms. And this week I just recorded the narration for the two stories.
Oh, wow.
And hopefully soon she'll launch it. The premise is that as you visit Versailles, although you could download it beforehand from wherever you get your apps, the king's stories is the story of the night of the famous Yew Tree Ball in February 1745, when the king was throwing this enormous masked ball for everybody in France, regardless of rank. They could all go because it was to celebrate the marriage of his son, the Dauphin. And the future woman named Jeanne Antoinette d'Etchiol came hoping that she could be the next royal mistress, because the king's mistress had just died a couple months earlier, and all the courtiers knew he was looking for a new woman, and he was bored with his wife after 10 kids. And she and her uncle, who was her godfather, and Voltaire all go to this yew tree ball, and they go through all of the king's rooms during this incredible party in hoping to meet the king. And then,
this is exciting. I wish we had more.
And the other one is Marie Antoinette herself on the last night that she would ever spend in Versailles when the fishwives marched on Paris.
Oh, this is so exciting for me. I am so thrilled with the Marie Antoinette trilogy is the best. It is absolutely fantastic. And I just want to tell all my listeners, just get all three of them. You will just have so much fun reading them. You bring this era to life, and it's just fascinating.
And she had an amazing life.
She did.
She was propagandized by history. So yep. I felt like I needed to tell her whole story from her childhood, where she had no agency, to becoming Queen of France, to becoming a victim of the French Revolution and all that transpired. So it did take me three books to tell it, and spoiler alert for your listeners, anybody who lived 200 years ago is dead now.
Get over it. Leslie, it's just always such a joy to talk to you. And as I said, whenever I think of royalty, I think of you, and I hope that you'll come back again whenever you have a book out. And we have to talk about some of your very early books, which are very funny.
Oh, yes, my contemporary novels.
Yes.
What's funny is one of them was titled Reality Check, which takes place on a reality TV dating show.
I know.
Long before those things became popular.
I know. You were ahead of your time. I love those contemporary books.
I had a lot of fun with those.
Well, you're going to be back again soon. Meanwhile, everybody, go to Leslie Carroll's website. It's RRLL Carroll. Beautiful. You look so beautiful. Of course, she was an actress. An actress is always an actress.
I'm an actress when they hire me.
That's what I was going to say.
And I do audiobooks.
When you're a Marine, you're a Marine forever. And when you're an actor, you're an actor forever. Yeah, and you keep going strong. Thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's been an absolute honor to have you back and to gossip a little bit about royalty. It's lovely.
Thank you, Patsy. Thank you for kicking off the summer with me.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye now.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Oh, she's so cute. Okay, let's do a quick... Is he on? Okay, we're going to go straight. We're skipping commercials. We're going to skip commercials because we're going to talk to somebody who I absolutely adore. And in fact, if he was in the studio, I would just be absolutely gaga over him. Because to me, this guy is even better than a rock star, because he is a rock star to me, and I am so happy to welcome. Am I going to welcome in a few minutes? I think so. I'm waiting because we have a tight schedule with this guy, and I am so thrilled because I really, really love him. Oh my goodness. Oh my dear. Sassafras and Ginger Beer. Roger Bennett is reborn in the USA. Hi, Rog.
Oh, Patsy, it's a joy to be with you.
Well, tell me, how's your head feeling today?
speaking to you, my head is just absolutely in the clouds. It's a dream come true, Patsy.
Well, did you have a few beers yesterday?
I had one or two.
One or two. Was that a game?
Like all English people, they really just take the beers and throw them in the air at the moment in joy and delirium.
Well, I know, and I wish I had been there. Because I'll tell you, it's funny. When I was 21 years old, I moved from northern Michigan to England because I wanted to live in England. So I fell in love with soccer. And the reason I'm having you on today... In addition to the fact that your book is opened up on the New York Times best-selling hardback book, it's number one best-selling book. Wow!
True, Patsy. The second England scored the goal,
that's
got them into the Euros final. The same second, I got a text from my editor, with the New York Times bestsellers list, and my book is number one, and it's deeply humbling. I wrote a book about my love of America, the idea that has shaped my life. I grew up in Liverpool in the 1980s, a wonderful city at a very hard time. The north of England was really falling apart economically, politically, culturally. Just the coal mines were closing, the steel mills, the cotton mills. If you've seen Billy Elliot, you kind of get the picture. And my life was lived in a city where there was high unemployment, a heroin epidemic. It was really quite dark. And I survived by telling myself I was an American trapped in an English boy's body. And I feasted on every single book, movie, television show, music, a sports team, the Chicago Bears, Run DMC, Tracy Chapman. And they were my light in the darkness. And ultimately, I followed that light and became an American. And at this time of chaos, I wanted to drop a book to America to show Americans how powerful the idea of America is, how it gives people around the world courage and joy and a sense of possibility. And that's ultimately the book, Reborn in the USA.
Well, you are fantastic. You know, it was yesterday. I followed you, and I was following everybody. You know, I am because I moved to England when I was 21 years old. I wanted to live near where Jane Austen was born. That was my obsession from the time I was 11, and I fell in love with soccer. I actually don't understand American football because it was soccer that really has always gripped me. So yesterday, when I'm watching that game, was that game something? That was so exciting. I have a Harry Kane bobblehead. I have a Harry Kane T-shirt. I have a Harry Kane Lego set. So I was a little bit wild yesterday.
I can only imagine. And your impulse to think in northern Michigan about living somewhere else, I've learned through my book, which is very detailed in its specificity, but the universality of being a teen in a dark time and making believe that you actually have an alter ego that lives elsewhere and romanticizing that. You and I did that in different times, in different
vice versa,
in different ways. But I think it's a deeply universal longing. And I've learned from so many Americans who've read the book that they grew up in, whether it's Los Angeles or Columbus or Miami, and they dreamt about, because they were Smiths fans, of moving to Manchester and being the alternate version of myself. And I think there's something very powerful and very beautiful. I've just acted upon my idea. It wasn't just an idea, it was a reality. And I moved here after meeting the Chicago Bears, who just won the Super Bowl, and talking to them about dreams and making dreams come true. After watching Run DMC just reinvent music by having a mouth like a fire hose and spitting out dreams and then following them and making them true. After watching Tracy Chapman just beguile the world with her stoicism, her emotional vulnerability, and her message, which was, if your life feels dark, get out while you can. All of these American cultural moments, they speak to people around the world. And I became American in a courtroom with 162 people from 42 different countries in 2018, the greatest day of my life, saying the oath of allegiance in that company. And when you speak to them in that courtroom, these human beings who've survived civil wars, famine, worse, walked huge distances, many of them, to come here, we all share a sense, an idea of America as a place filled with courage that gave us strength. It gave us self-confidence when we needed it. It gave us a sense of a different possibility. And it's only then do you realize just the depth, the power, the wonder of the idea of America that it can have and it still has around the world. I think Americans who were born here, multi-generational, often take for granted.
Exactly. Well, as I said, I moved to the other side, and I enjoyed my life there, and I lived also in other places in Europe and the Middle East. But I'll tell you, there is nothing like America. I don't care what anybody says. This it is a land of possibilities. It is a land of hope, and you can accomplish so much. And I was thrilled with this book, and I loved when you wrote about your meeting somebody very famous at O'Hare Airport when you were young. Tell us about that.
The Chicago Bears had just won the Super Bowl, and I love them because My family had left Europe planning to move to Chicago in the early 1900s. They were butchers. They wanted to move to the hog capital of the world. So when the NFL started to be broadcast in England in the early 80s, the Chicago Bears just drew my immediate love. And they'd been a terrible team. But suddenly, they reinvented themselves as a swashbuckling, trash-talking, biblically smiting team of wonder. And I love them because they showed that you could change your own fortunes. You didn't have to be what you were meant to be. If you were a self-sabotaging loser, you could reinvent yourself and become a dominant Super Bowl winner. And I love them. I came to Chicago when I was 15 for the summer to visit my pen pal. And the only tragedy of that summer, which was the greatest of my life, was that the Chicago Bears were in London when I arrived in the Dallas Cowboys in the first ever game played at Wembley. And on the broadcast, the commentator said, "And the Bears are turning right round tonight to go home to O'Hare." And I said, "We've got to go and meet them." So I made my host drive out at 3 a.m. to go to O'Hare, international arrivals, and we welcomed the Bears. I got to meet Walter Payton, who was a remarkable man in reality, as he was mythically in my imagination. I got to meet Mike Ditka. I got to meet William Refrigerator Perry, the kind of carnival figure who was the emblem of the team, a giant of a man who just played with such joy on both sides of the ball. And he put his arm around me and whispered into my ear. He said, "Be what you want to be. Dream big dreams. I did. You can too," which I now know is a cliche that every athlete says to any kid they want to get away from. But when I was 15, it changed my life. It sounded as if the fridge himself was telling me to move to America. And so I did.
Well, I think it is a wonderful book. It deserves to be number one on the New York Times best-selling hardback books. It is wonderful. It's funny. You are hilarious. Of course, I love you. I love Dave, by the way. And
he's a beautiful human being.
Oh, he is. He is.
And love you and your passion for England right back.
Oh, you know, and of course,
joy to be on your show.
One of the reasons I love you is that, I mean, you've actually touched Harry Kane, right?
Yes, I've met your hero, and I will say he is the joy of Harry Kane. Is that he's an everyday hero. Everything he's achieved, he's done through bloody hard work, through determination. Part of the reason I left England is that we love to have heroes, mostly so we can cut them down to our own size. And Harry Kane has been written off so many times.
Oh, they're so mean to him. I get so angry. Oh,
With such tenacity, he's shown them that they don't know what they're talking about and has risen harder and more successful again. And again and again. And I admire that human trait in him more than, you know, that's the greatest human trait in life, tenacity, determination, and he deserves every human wonder. He's fantastic.
Exactly. My sister was crying every time they knocked him down yesterday. We were so enthralled.
Harry Kane has dedicated his penalty to you.
Oh, what I loved about the program too yesterday, the coverage, was that they kept showing him so much at the end. They kept showing him, and I kept seeing his face, and he was so wonderful. And oh, you know, I'm sort of connected from you to him, and you know, I'm going to live my dream. Maybe someday I will meet him because my sister and I just she has one of these 25-foot Tottenham scarves that she wraps around her for good luck during the games. So
that's what sports is all about. Like great books, sport is about transporting yourself to a different place, a different reality, a different set of narratives. And I truly understand your passion. I wish you and your sister Godspeed, and it's a joy to be with you, Patsy.
Okay, I know you have to go, but anytime you want to come back, I'll give you a whole hour. You can promote the book, and you can bring Dave, and we'll talk, and we'll talk about Reborn in the USA. Roger Bennett, you are so, well, as we would say in England, brilliant, brilliant.
Oh, Patsy, yeah, it's a joy to be with you. Thank you for having me on, and Godspeed.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. Bye-bye now.
Bye, Patsy.
Oh, I love this guy. Do you love this? I love his show. Men in Blazers. It is so funny. I hope I can get him back. I'm going to try to get him back for an entire hour. He's on one of these, what they call a satellite thing, where they, I don't know, he must be here. Have a little bit of a hangover after yesterday's event, because it was a big game. In a minute, I'm going to come back and talk to another author that I had on a while back, and I want to bring him back. But I want, first, I'm going to play the new book buzz for Carol J. Perry's latest book. It's coming out in August, and it is her new series. And Carol is an example of what can happen if you just, like Roger says, just do it. She started writing books, when she was past retirement age, I would say. And in 6 years, she's written 11 of these wonderful, wonderful cozy mysteries called Witch City Mysteries. And now she has this fantastic new series. And she was just, she got the coveted star review in Publishers Weekly. And she's accomplished this in 6 years, 6 years of dedication. So this book buzz is for Carol J. Perry. Then we're going to come back and I'm going to talk to Erin Leibel.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz. Be My Ghost, a Haunted Haven mystery book number one by Kensington author Carol J. Perry. Newsflash! Be My Ghost has been named 15 of the best upcoming cozy mysteries for the second half of 2021. Wowzer! Okay, here's the buzz. Maureen and her golden retriever, Finn, have taken possession of a charming old inn, only to discover that it's already possessed by tenants whose lease on life already ran out. Maureen's career as a sportswear buyer hits a snag just before Halloween when the department store declares bankruptcy. Meanwhile, Finn's lost his way as a guide dog after flunking his test for being too friendly and easily distracted. Sadly, only one of them can earn unemployment. So Maureen's facing a winter of discontent in Boston when she realizes she can't afford her apartment. Salvation comes when she receives a mysterious inheritance, an inn in Haven, Florida, a quaint scenic town on the Gulf of Mexico, hidden away from the theme parks. Maureen believes it's a good place to make a fresh start with a new business venture. But she gets more than she's bargained for when she finds a dead body on her property and meets some of the inn's everlasting tenants in the form of ghosts who offer their otherworldly talents in order to help her solve the mystery. Be My Ghost, a Haunted Haven mystery book number one by fabulous Kensington author Carol J. Perry. It releases August 31st, but it's available now for pre-order on Amazon. Can't wait? Hey, check out Carol J. Perry's Witch City Mystery Series. There's 11 books and counting. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's Radio-Joy on Paper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
Oh, I love this new series of Carol's. It's set here in Florida. And every day when I come to the studio, I drive past the Bel Air Biltmore, golf course. It used to be the Bel Air Biltmore Hotel, which they knocked down. But the golf course is still there. And so many famous people played on that golf course. And of course, Babe Ruth was one of them. And he used to love this golf course. And so every time I drive to the studio, I'm thinking of Babe Ruth. And Carol has Babe Ruth figures into this book and a little bit of Joe DiMaggio, my favorite, because I'm someone who just loves baseball and particularly those two. So this series is going to be just fantastic. And that she got this wonderful star to review. Oh, I'm so happy for her because you all know who listened to the program, she was my first in-studio guest. And now I sort of skipped my commercials. But I just want to thank Larson & Larson. Bill Larson is going to be on at the end of the month, and we're going to be talking about intellectual property. And he's so wonderful, and there's many things to talk about that are happening in the world of intellectual property. His biggest warning is be careful of what you... careful what you write on social media. Always think before you push that button. And also, we'll talk about protecting your intellectual property. And again, I want to thank Glenn Erickson for supporting Joy on Paper, what he's doing for us, and supporting authors in general. And writing groups is fantastic. I'm always honored to just think about the kind of... you know, when somebody cares about other people and has a warm and generous heart, that's Glenn Erickson. And he wants all of you out there to find your passion, as he has, in writing, and join a group and share that. And one day you will be a guest here on Joy on Paper, like Aaron Leibel. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, Patsy.
Okay. Well, I wanted to have you back. You know, the problem with... book marketing is that a book is released, it comes out, and you get some coverage, and then it's difficult after that to get anyone to talk about the book. But I wanted to bring you back because I think that, you know, your book, Figs and Alligators, it's so well written, and it is, I think it's a very relevant book because it talks about, you know, Israel, and so many people wonder about what life is like in Israel, what people went through or go through there. And I thought you brought to light many, many aspects of Israeli life that I think are helpful for people to know. And so the name of the book is Figs and Alligators, which is, I think, a lovely title, An American Immigrant's Life in Israel in the 1970s and 1980s. So how are you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Well, of course, now it's been a difficult year. It's still difficult getting out there and going around and to all of the book events. How are you reaching out? How's your marketing going?
Well, I've had a lot of Zoom presentations of the book with my synagogue, with the publisher's synagogue, and with other various groups and synagogues. So I have been doing some marketing of the book.
Well, it's not easy. And, before all this pandemic-y thing, there were so many more opportunities of book fairs, book events to attend where you can reach a wide range of readers. Because we want to get this book out not just to Jewish organizations, which I think is wonderful, but there are so many other organizations that support Israel, organizations that I think their members would also love to read this book because it's very personable. It's very, you tell a very human story. And as I said, you make that period of Israel come alive. It was a tumultuous time.
It certainly was a tumultuous time. And as you say, I try to tell my story and my family's story of living in Israel in the 1970s and 1980s. But this was also, as you noted, this was a very important time in Israel's history. And this is not a history, but I try to integrate into the book the highlights of what was going on in the country. For example, my family and I lived through the Yom Kippur War. The terrorist attack in the attacks in the 1970s in the Galilee, and terrible attacks like the massacre at Maalot in Kiryat Shmona, if you remember those events, and then the political upheaval. You know, Israel had been ruled by the left-wing Labor Party since its inception, and in 1977 there was a big upheaval, and Menachem Begin, the perennial opposition leader, became prime minister. And then, of course, Anwar Sadat's visit to Jerusalem and the subsequent peace treaty, the first Lebanon war, the hyperinflation, and then, unfortunately, the first intifada. So, again, what I tried to do in the book is to give sort of a human interest look at all of these events.
Well, you do, and I think it's important that more people read about Israel, understand what they've gone through, and how difficult life can be for Israelis, and the great work that is being done in Israel. You know, when you look now at Israel and you see, from that perspective, when you from the 1970s to now, the hospitals, the schools, did you see that just now at the Technion they have a new big building? It's so amazing the work that the Israelis are doing to really educate people, and the Hadassah Hospital. Of course, I was a president of our local Hadassah group, and I'm sure now that things are picking up again, you will be invited to some of the Hadassah conventions. You definitely should. You should be at all of these events. Once they start doing them again, I hope they're going to start doing them, because Hadassah conventions, it used to be so much fun. And we always looked forward to having really wonderful and talented authors. And of course, you're a journalist, and which is one of the reasons I think your writing is so good. So I hope that, I will continue to promote it. I've told already my local Hadassah and synagogue to, invite you to do some Zoom events, because I think that I just want to get the word out. So that's why I wanted to have you back just for a few minutes today to say that I really appreciate your book, and I think you did a terrific job with it. Do you have a website you want people to go to?
Well, they can go to
It's available online. I don't know if you also do Facebook, but the book is available online. It's called Figs and Alligators. That's easy to remember. Figs and Alligators. And just quickly explain to people why figs and alligators.
Because the two words in Hebrew confused me when I first got there, and I thought they were soup. Enim are figs, and taninim are alligators. And I often told my daughter, this is a crazy language. You can go to the market, order a couple kilos of figs, and the guy will give you some alligators.
That's it. Well, I love the title, and I think that you did a great job with the book, and I hope that people will read it and that you'll get out there and do some more marketing to a wide range of groups, okay?
Thank you very much, Beth.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, well, that's funny what, he mentioned about mispronouncing words in Hebrew. When I went to England, one of the first things I did, I said to somebody, I moved to my village, and I said, I'm going to Slough to see P.J. Wodehouse's book. I wanted to see P.J. Wodehouse's book. And the person looked at me, and they're like, what? And I didn't. Eventually, they explained. Slough, what we would pronounce Slough, is actually pronounced slow. And Wodehouse, which of course, P.J. Wodehouse is the author of the Jeeves books, is actually pronounced Woodhouse. So I was going to Slough to see P.J. Woodhouse's book, but I didn't know it. Until you learn these things. Coming from Northern Michigan, we didn't know. Nobody read P.J. Wodehouse. And it's also like... it's July 10th is the birthday of Marcel Proust, which also, when I went to England, I pronounced Proust, because they had a group there that was reading the book Swan's Way. And so it's Marcel Proust's birthday, July 10th. He was born in 1871. Absolutely fantastic. If you haven't read the book, you should. It is a book of joy. If the word that comes to mind when you finish that book is pure joy. Now, it is, granted, it is over 4,000 pages, but it doesn't feel like it. And it is an incredible book, and one day I'll talk about it. I should actually find somebody who's done a biography of him, and we'll talk about Marcel Proust, because I read it the book twice, once with this group that was in my village, and they read it out loud, and it was really fantastic. It was a wonderful experience, and And then to celebrate, we all went to Paris. So we took a trip to Paris to walk. Well, he didn't do a lot of walk. Well, we went to wherever we could to celebrate his life. And it's going to be his birthday on July 10th. So, boy, wow. Anyway, it's been a fantastic day. So there I am, thinking about England because of Roger Bennett. Roger Bennett's book, Reborn in the USA, is a beautiful, wonderful book. Funny. He's a character. The radio, well, the podcast, whatever his program is on MSNBC. I don't know what. He's on NBC, one of the sports networks. Anyway, Men in Blazers is hilarious. He's hilarious. And the book is, it really will touch your heart, in addition to making you laugh out loud. So you can find that, you know, where books are sold. And, you know, isn't it wonderful? This is what happens. You know, here he comes to America, and the first book he writes, it lands up to be number one on the New York Times bestselling list. Fantastic. This is one of the joys that I'm always talking to you about. You never know, you know, what can happen to you. So, again, this one, and again, thank Leslie Carroll. Leslie is one of my favorite authors. Her books, her Marie Antoinette series, it's a trilogy. It is from start to finish. I don't know, you have tears in your eyes at the beginning, at the end. A wonderful, wonderful series, and I really want to recommend that. And of course, so much for Aaron Leibel's book, Figs and Alligators. Okay, everybody. Wow, we missed the hurricane. Thank you, Morgan and Morgan. I'm thankful always for Morgan and Morgan for the windows that they put in. They were fantastic. We didn't have any wind to worry about, but if we did, I know it wouldn't have bothered me. But the wonderful thing about Morgan and Morgan windows, and I'm telling you this right now, they have cut my electric bill. I was amazed. I could not believe how much I saved after those windows were put in. They are fantastic. And I really, and considering how everything is going up in this world, wow. Anyway, that's it for today. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend, everybody. And thank again Bill Larson for me skipping his ad. Because remember, you know, one of the things I always tell you is that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry's Witch City Mysteries. Because now that she started the second series, boy, oh boy, Hallmark, pay attention. You have one wonderful series in store for you if you pick up Carol J. Perry. I love her books. I love Aunt Ibby. I love everybody. Orion, she's got the best cat in the business. Really wonderful, wonderful books. So everybody, pre-order her new series. It's just, you'll enjoy it. And it's absolutely fantastic. Okay, everybody, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. Thank you so much. He saluted me, and I saluted him. And we are all in a really good mood because here, Tampa Bay area, my goodness, now we are known as a city of champions. Did you like that game last night? That was something. Hey, Ed, did you like that game?
Great game.
Oh, absolutely fantastic. Okay, bye-bye now.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3